Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
And we're going to be back to Florida, Southeast, after a nice trip to France. I'll be talking about the mineral composition and removal of the main perennial grasses we have as a potential candidates for bioenergy crops in the Southeast, in Florida in particular. I don't think I'm going to spend too much time here. So just a basic background of what we are dealing with, what's the problem, which is basically we have a high demand for energy, both transportation fuel as well as the other forms. We don't have that many local resources. We export most of the energy, so we need to develop some new systems to produce that energy, and that's where the bioenergy crops can fill in. But there are some concerns with the bioenergy crops on their general effect on the environment, the sustainability issues, and the food versus fuel debate. And we have mandates on corn just because of that issue, and that gives us potential for the more crops that are adapted to a specific region to be used as a bioenergy feedstocks. For all these crops to be used as a bioenergy, the mineral composition of those crops become very important, both from the perspective of convergent processes, such as conversion to ethanol, or even using them as in direct combustion or gasification kind of processes. And then they also play an important role when it comes to the environmental sustainability of these production systems. So a quick overview of why perennial grasses. They can establish quickly, produce annual harvest. They are rapid growing grasses. Most of them are C4 grasses, have high water use efficiency, nutrient use efficiency. They don't need every year establishment costs on seed and preparation of soil and those kind of things. And they do provide ecosystem services, such as habitat for even the animals and carbon fixation, storage of carbon in the below ground root parts. So this study was planned to characterize the mineral composition in the whole plant tissue for these perennial crops. And also we were interested in total biomass yield of these perennial crops, which is an important parameter while calculating the mineral removals from these grasses, which basically is the multiplication of the concentration of nutrients and their biomass yield. So this study was conducted at three sites in North, Central, and South Florida. So the sites were Citra, Onan, and Belgrade, and I'll be referring them as the North, Central, and South location. As you move south in Florida, the temperatures go up. The rainfall goes up as well in the south location a little bit. The soil type in the north and central location was heavy sandy soils. However, in the south location, the soil type is histosoil, which is a high organic soils with organic matter content of 70% or higher than that. We used 6 perennial species. They were established in fall of 2008, and we used 280/31 and 116 NPK per hectare per year, except for our south location, which has, again, those high organic soils, which can mineralize more than 500 pounds of N per year. So we did not apply any nitrogen on that location. The irrigation was applied as required. These grasses were harvested once per year, just before the frost event that could occur in our south location. And the data was collected in plant cane as well as first year tune. And since we did not see a significant year effect, we pooled the data and presented the results as a combination of both years. The data was analyzed using Proglimix in CES. So these are the 6 species we used, CP89, 2143 sugar cane, and L79, 1002 energy cane, and a breeding line for a sweet cane. So these three are the cane types, and then we had a Mercuron elephant grass, and then a Illionite giant miscanthus. And then we had a giant reed local accession that we used in our study. Moving on to the results, I'm going to first talk about the mineral concentrations, then I'll move on to biomass yields, and then lastly I'll talk about the removals, which again is a multiplier of concentrations as well as the biomass yields. So the data will be presented in these figures, which might be a lot to read, but I'll point out to the important points. We have three locations, and then we have six grasses. They are always in this order: giant reed, then sugarcane, sweet cane, energy cane, your three cane types, and then elephant grass, and then the last one, the one in dark, is the giant miscanthus. And we'll have the respective variable on y-axis. So first of all, the ash concentration. So in our study, in general, the ash concentrations were relatively low, and they were below a threshold level of 50 grams per kg, which is 5% on a dry weight basis. And when I talk about threshold, it generally means regarding combustion and direct gasification processes, and helps below those levels, helps in reducing the fouling, the slagging of the equipment. So in general, all of our species were below the threshold, and the concentrations were very similar across species. And mostly we saw that sugarcane showed a lower concentration at each location. You can see here, and that we believe was because of a dilution effect, because sugarcane has higher concentrations of the soluble sugars in it. Moving on to N concentrations, again over here we had relatively low N concentrations in our biomass. They were below a threshold level of 10, which would be above everything. And the concentrations were similar for these four species, the three cane types, as well as the elephant grass, across all three locations, averaging around 5.2 grams per kg. And then we had, in general, we had giant reeds, which showed higher concentrations at all locations, and giant miscanthus, which showed lower concentration at each location. Moving on to P and K concentrations. Again, we have P on the left, the concentration, and potassium on the right. And the P concentrations were, again, similar across most sites. One thing I forgot to mention is these small letters, they show a comparison of species within a site, and the capital letters, they show a comparison of a species across three locations. So the P concentrations were, again, very similar across locations and across species within the location, except for P, for the elephant grass, which showed higher concentrations, at least at two locations in north and south. Moving on to potassium, again, our main four species, the three cane types and the elephant grass, showed similar concentrations in north and south location, and which was significantly higher than the concentrations in our central location, which might be because of low potassium content that we had at the central location. Moving on to sulfur and chlorine, which are important again from combustion and direct gasification processes. The sulfur content in our species were generally below the threshold value of 3 grams per kg, except for giant reed and your energy cane in the south location, which might be because of higher nutrient contents that we found in those high organic soils in the south location. And moving on to chlorine, that was interesting. It's a really important nutrient for these direct combustion processes, and in all of our species, at all locations, it was always higher than the threshold level of 2 grams per kg. And in general, we found that energy cane and elephant grass has the greatest amount of chlorine in the tissue, and sugarcane and giant miscanthus had the lower chlorine concentrations. We had data on other macro as well as micronutrients, but I'm not presenting that because of the limitation of time. Moving on to dry matter yield. Again, here we found that three cane types, sugarcane, sweet cane, and energy cane, as well as our elephant grass, had similar yields across all three locations, ranging between 35 to 40 megagrams per hectare, which is a really good yield. And the giant reed had a lower yield than these four species, averaging around 24 megagrams per hectare, and giant miscanthus was the lowest at all locations, averaging only around 14 megagrams per hectare. A quick overview of the dry matter fraction. So in most of the species, the dry matter percentage was above 30%. And the highest concentrations were found in giant miscanthus, followed by giant reed. And those two were among the lower on the total biomass yields. So that has a significance in the transportation and conversion processes, that a higher dry matter fraction is good in those aspects. But they were lower in the total biomass yields. And all the other four species were around 30% dry matter. And we also found that the biomass partitioning to leaf and stem, they were pretty similar across all species at all sites, around 23% leaf and 77% stem fraction. Moving on to the removals now, which again is a multiplier of the total concentrations times the biomass yield. First, the end removal, and we had a very huge range because of those lower yields in our giant reed and giant miscanthus. And again, those four species where we did see, because of the similar nitrogen concentration in the tissues and similar biomass, they had a similar end removals, and they ranged around 179 kgs per hectare per year. And giant miscanthus had the lowest end removal at each location because of the lower biomass yields. Moving on to the pea removal, here again we had a huge range from 8 to 67 kgs per hectare per year. And then the sugarcane, sweetcane, and energy cane, they had the same removals at three sites. However, elephant grass had the highest removal in north. And in general, it had higher removals because of the higher concentration of peat that we found in this particular species. Moving on to cane removals, again, a huge range because of the variation in the biomass yield. Again, all of our four species, the three cane types and the elephant grass, they were similar at north and south location, but significantly lower in our central location. And we found similar trend in the cane concentrations as well. So that pretty much showed up in here as well. And on an average, they removed 279 kilograms of potassium per hectare per year. And again, the giant reed and giant miscanthus were on the lower end because of the lower biomass yields for those species we had in our location. So in summary, we did found that the total ash concentrations were below the threshold value for these direct combustion processes, and they were pretty similar among the species at each location. However, the individual mineral nutrients, they varied by site and species, depending on the availability of those nutrients in the soil. Our south location, because of the high organic matter content and higher nutrient concentrations, had in general higher nutrient concentrations for various macro as well as micronutrients. And we found a higher dry biomass yield potential for our four main species, the sugarcane, sweetcane, energy cane, and elephant grass, compared to the other two species we had, the giant reed and giant miscanthus, which had a higher biomass concentrations. So that has implications on the transportation and in the conversion processes, less energy to dry those materials. And we found the high nutrient removals mainly for these four high-yielding crops, the 179, 41, and 279 of NP and K per hectare per year. Because of that, again, the high biomass production. So overall, the take-home message here would be that we can achieve these high yields in Florida and in Southeast in general, but we need to have a moderate to high fertility inputs in order to achieve those high biomass yields. And that'll be it. And I would like to acknowledge all the people who helped us in the field and the lab experiments and all the funding agencies that helped support this project. And with that, I'll be up for any questions.
We have time for questions.
Yes, sir.
How much luxury uptake do you anticipate? high levels are in soil?
We had actually moderate levels. The soils were not really high in the total potassium. Particularly the central location had actually low potassium content in the soil. But we still ended up removing quite a bit. So, and this data is only from the first 2 years, and we ran this experiment for 4 years, so that overall data will give us even a better idea about the total nutrient removal efficiencies that we have on these soil types. Yes, sir.
With a long grown season, I mean, is there room for a two-harvest system, or is that not?
Actually, I think during 1 year of the study, we had to do two harvests. We irrigate these plots using an overhead sprinkle irrigation system, and the first year of the study, it actually fell down because these grasses were so tall. So when the system was running, it fell down. So we had to harvest. The farm manager made us to harvest these trials in July so that the system won't tip over and they don't need to spend extra money. And I believe we had good yields. I'm not the person, I guess, right person to answer that question, but we have data on that. And I think everything except Arundo, if I'm correct, yielded pretty good. And I guess Miscanthus as well. But yeah, there's a potential for two harvests, I guess, because of that long harvest season. Yes, sir.
Yeah, back on your potassium, once we used, there was quite a bit of difference there in location. Was that then mostly due to yield, or what?
For potassium?
Yeah.
Again, the central location we had lower potassium content at the beginning of the experiment. I did not show the soil test results here, but at the beginning of the experiment, it had lower potassium content. And we, again, found the highest removals in our south location, which has the high organic soil, those muck soils above 70-80% organic matter. So we believe the driver is in there, at the soil type at each location. And then biomass yields have a major role as well. The more biomass you produce, the more removals you are going to get. Yes, sir.
During the harvesting seasons, you said that we all harvested before the frost.
Yeah.
So is there any situation where you harvested it beyond winter? Because winter weathering is something that will allow the recycling of minerals. And did you do any of those things?
Yeah, actually, in our north location, we really don't get. In the southmost location in Belgrade, we really don't get too many frost events. It's pretty much subtropical. And I think, again, during 1 year of the study, we had we did do some sampling before the frost and after the frost. And again, I don't think we did see a whole lot decline in yield. So there's a potential for that because, again, as you're saying, that chances of having more of those nutrients go back to the soil are higher if you wait longer. And you also shed the leaves, and that was more of an issue in Miscanthus, that you end up shedding more leaves because of a frost event. So, yeah, that's a good idea, too.
Okay, and that was a great morning session. Right. I think we're going to have to cut off there, but it looks like most of our speakers are still in the room, so feel free to ask more questions. As appropriate. And with that, I think if there's no further announcements, we're back in this room at 10 o'clock, right? Thanks.